Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live, and today Josh Abramson is back to tell us some more about changing the world so that our default greeting is no longer hello, but I love you. And I'm just going to go right to you, except I do want to say that you're one of the few people I've ever known that makes changing the world that kind of combination of critical, important, and so charming.
Oh, well, thank you.
And just flat out fun. I mean, I think everybody who knows you is rooting for you to get this done. And I want to ask you about your trip to Washington, D.C., because I think Congress may be rooting for you.
Well, I love you. I love you. I love you, Janet Gallen. And it's so great to sit here again with you. And
you're a total uplift.
Well, thank you. Right back at you.
I'll try not to interrupt again. Okay, go ahead. I'm sitting here like a grinning idiot. Go ahead.
So for those who haven't been just enwrapped listening to all of our Love Letters Live, I am the Johnny Appleseed of I Love You. And I have a vision and a mission where all 7.3 billion of us now start every conversation with I Love You and go from there. And not from a touchy, feely, warm and fuzzy perspective, but in terms of workability and unity and togetherness and pragmatism. I do play shops around I Love You Made Easy, and I also consult in the business world with I Love You for Business and Why It Matters.
And people can listen to your two preceding Love Letters Live to get a fuller view of all this.
Well, now they will be riveted, and they'll listen to every word of our previous podcast so that they can get the full backstory.
I just want to make sure they know they can get there.
Yes.
On the site. Okay.
So, I have this tool called the I Love You Challenge, where you can, without the benefits of a play shop, just come and get the I Love You awareness for yourself, so that you have the freedom and you can get crazy freed up around sharing I Love You with everybody that you meet. And so, if you go to joshuaabramson.com. I Love You, you will find the I Love You Challenge and the instructions on how to be able to embrace I Love You as your universal greeting. And D.C., you say. So
your trip to Washington, D.C., yes.
So for a number of years, I've shared thousands of I Love Yous, random I Love Yous, and done many, many events and touched hundreds and hundreds of people with getting them crazy freed up around sharing I Love You as the universal greeting and why it's important. And when I first got the vision 7 years ago, what I used to say is imagine that at every session of Congress, that our elected representatives start each session by turning to the congressman or the senator to their left and their right and saying, I love you, and then going from there. Imagine our president starting the State of the Union address by saying, my fellow Americans, I love you. So that would be a world that I would really like to see. And so for years, I've gotten to work with eBay and PayPal as a consultant, supporting them on their journey about being a heart-based business. And I have also had an eBay-based business and work with them on best practices. And I'm part of a team called the eBay Government Advocacy Group. And
what do they do? I mean, what do they advocate?
Well, what they do is they support mostly small and medium businesses and with legislation that could impact our community either adversely or positively, and to be able to get us active and being able to be our own advocates. So once a year they do an advocacy day where they bring in a group of sellers from all over the country to be able to meet with their representatives. And since they already know me as the I Love You Man, and I stand, I'm a symbol of that in their community.
Well, you say they already know you. You mean eBay?
eBay does.
Yes. Okay. Because so, Congress is about to.
Yeah. So okay. They know me as the I Love You Man, and they figure that if they're bringing me to DC to be able to talk on behalf of other eBay sellers, that there's a very good chance that I'm also going to talk about I Love You.
Oh, because they know you.
Yes.
I see. Okay.
So our very first night in D.C., before we went around and met all of our members of Congress in this epic day of touring Capitol Hill, there was a little reception, maybe 75 to 100 people maximum. And we're standing there at the reception.
You and Congress people.
Yeah. Well, okay. No, this was all just eBay sellers.
Oh, just the eBay. Okay.
And eBay staff and a few other support people. But there were no members of Congress in sight.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, the room just parted slightly, and there was Mitch McConnell. And I was a little confronted. Mitch McConnell, Senator McConnell, is not a man that I don't align with his beliefs. I would say that we're probably about as diametrically opposed as you could be. And he's a very easy person for me to vilify as well. How could he be so obstructionist? How could he bring the gears of our country to a halt? Blah, blah, blah. But there he was. And I found myself standing right in front of him. And in D.C., this is the first time that I've been there, and there's no sense of personal space. I think maybe because it's such a loud place, everybody is just always pressing up against each other to be able to make their point. So we're standing like right there at the boundary or slightly inside the boundary of each other's personal space. And I'm looking right at this man in front of me, and I genuinely felt nothing but love and admiration for him, which I, inside my body, I thought that was a really strange thing to be feeling.
Yes, but given how you feel.
Exactly.
So what made that happen?
Well, I think it's, we'll talk about this, but what really underlies it all is that we are one.
Okay.
We just are one. It's our natural state of being. We are all of it. That's just who we are. And we're having this individual human experience. So we hold this delightful paradox all the time. And I think that so much of the disorder and disharmony that we feel right now, and we can look at our world and it could be a very frightening or distressing place to us, is that we're suffering from a bit of a narcissistic disorder, where we're out of alignment and we're a little bit more trapped in this, in our skin suit, in this I definition of ourselves. And so
that's how you're meaning the narcissistic.
Right.
Yes.
And we forget that we are all of it, even though it's just who we are. And I think that maybe at different times in our history or in different cultures and different societies, maybe with more of a practice or being just more of a part of nature, that it was easy for us to be constantly reminded that we're just all of it. And we don't really do that much anymore. And because our civilization is so wonderful and beautiful and comfortable, I mean, look, we're sitting here, we're having a conversation with this skinny little thing that's a laptop computer and a microphone, and we're going out over the internet webs, and anybody in the world can listen to us having this delightful conversation. Or even 20 years ago, we couldn't do that.
Right.
So I think we get lulled into the comfort, and we get lulled into the I-ness and the otherness especially. And I find it saddening and heartbreaking that our otherness is so confronting us right now. It's so in our faces.
So are you looking at this as a way of otherness? Like we're not really with all these other people. We're just us.
Right. And everybody, and we're pointing at them over there going, they're different. Mm-hmm. I'm better.
Well, that's a different thing than I was asking.
Right. So win, lose, top dog, underdog, aggressor, victim, that we do it maybe thousands of times a day. Just look and listen to the noise in your head as you walk down the street. You're not walking down the street looking at everybody out there going, oh, I love me over there. There I am. We're looking at them and going, what a stupid haircut. Or how could you go out in public like that? Or don't you realize that this is my personal space? This sidewalk is mine. Whoever taught you how to walk? And
okay.
we have
you just ended my participation, so I hope you would just do this for the next.
So we have this endless background noise, this litany in our heads, and all it's doing is reinforcing otherness. You are not me. And I am so vastly superior, then you just look at you and look at me.
Oh, my goodness. You have just so nailed mankind.
And this is the human paradox. This is what comes with having this individual experience, that we have this unfortunate monologue in our head. It's not a dialogue with anyone. It's this monologue in our head where we're very free to point out to everybody else in the world how they're vastly inferior to all of us.
Because it uplifts us, though.
It does. It makes us feel better.
Isn't that just creepy?
Well, yeah, about all the stuff that we're not doing and all of our imperfections. It's
brilliant.
Like, well,
oh, goodness.
So I haven't taken out the trash today. So I have this endless supply of emails in my inbox. But you know what? At least I'm better than that person.
You're not the trash.
Right. Look at my haircut. Look at theirs. Life is great. Anyway, but we digress. So then there's Mitch McConnell.
Right.
And
you're looking at him, and you're in his space, and you're feeling love for him. What do you do?
What I see, though, is I just see not the other, but I see me. I see that we're all of it. And I'm just looking at Mitch McConnell, and I say, Senator McConnell, I love you. And he chortled like a chicken, which is an unusual disconnect for a man of his power and stature to have this little chicken guffaw.
Yes, yes.
And he took it, though. He withstood
it like a man.
He did. He withstood it. And he's like, now, where are you from? And I said, San Francisco. And I think maybe it made more sense to him at that moment. But then I shared, I said, I have this, I'm the Johnny Appleseed of I Love You, and I have this vision in this project called I Love You World, where all 7 billion of us start every conversation and go from there. And when I first introduced the vision, I would tell everybody that our esteemed Congress, you are elected representatives, would turn to the senator to your left and turn to the senator to your right and say, I love you, to start every session. And he guffawed again. And he leaned in a little bit conspiratorially and said, oh, we're too busy throwing stuff at each other.
Oh.
And
that's a nice acknowledgement.
It was a nice acknowledgement.
Yes.
And I said, well, I just encourage you to think about it. Think about it, embrace it. And then, you know, we went our ways, and as he was leaving the party, he passed by me again, and I said one more time, I love you, Senator McConnell. And I heard him go, trailing off as he went on his way. And that would be enough for me right there, that the very first elected representative that I should happen to meet would be none other than Senator Mitch McConnell. I mean, the cosmic clown was having a pretty good time with me.
Yes, exactly. And then giving you someone you already really do love and didn't have a long ways
but
to go.
But how perfect is that?
Yes, it is.
And but that isn't the end of it, because this is D.C. And in D.C. everything centers around a story. So what better story do I have now as I meet the other representatives that I should meet than, you know, last night I saw Senator McConnell and I told him that I loved him. And that caused no end of delight.
So you could say this right to the next people you... I mean, this
right.
is still in Washington. Yes.
So I ended up meeting 7 senators and representatives total. And I met Senator Steve Daines, a Republican from Montana. A lovely man who was talking about... he was wearing a gorgeous pair of handmade boots in his suit, and he says, now I don't look like this back home. I'm in my Carhartts driving around in my truck from end to end across the state talking to the people. Now, he talked about a degree of workability in Washington that was pretty amazing, because he said, in Montana, we don't vote the ticket. So we don't vote along party lines. We vote for whomever is, and this is my parlance, the best dog catcher for the job. so that in Montana, more than really any other state in America, they tend to split the ticket, where they might vote Republican for president and Democrat for senator, and then their representatives that they'll split as well, because they're really looking for the best man or the best woman who's suited for the job. And so he was the first.
That's impressive.
It was refreshing to hear as well, too. And then I met John Thune, who is another Republican from South Dakota, a wonderful, distinguished, very warm man. And he was the one, he really summed up what all of them said to me. And he said, you know, because he's from South Dakota, very successful businessman, multi-generational South Dakotan. Recently, he's new to politics, but he's already a fairly powerful member within the Senate. And he said, you know, we have a lack of workability, and we have a lack of civility here in Congress that we used to have. And we're really missing that. We could use more of that. I think there's something to this I love you business. So as a group, I found them to be more just immediately accepting and open than really any other community that I could point to.
It's astounding.
Yeah, and they all just said, yeah, I love you. I get that. And, of course, as I meet him and Representative Barbara Comstock from Virginia, what a tremendous woman. I was so thrilled and proud as an American, in that definition of my otherness, that she is one of our duly elected representatives and that she's there supporting and advocating for us. So when I told her, I said, hey, when you see Senator McConnell tomorrow, you tell him you love him. And, everybody just about died with laughter when I suggested that. And they said, oh, you bet I will. But when I was talking to her about that, she says, oh, honey, you had me at I love you. That just, she's like, yeah, yes. Of course we start every session with I love you. How could we not do that? And they also, all of the insiders in Washington said things really changed here about 4 or 5 years ago.
Why?
One was the end of appropriations. So no more pork. You couldn't put appropriation in bills, which was the currency of Washington for centuries, is that you look after my constituents and I'll look after yours. And there was a sense of deal making and congeniality and that,
oh, that
all for one, one for all, that
oh.
comes from the deal making going, yeah, I will do something special for your constituents. You'll do something special for my constituents, because at the end of the day, we're all Americans. So there was that. And then at the same time, they said that it used to be 3 weeks on, 1 week off in D.C., so that everybody was just very connected with each other. They socialized together. They were always with each other a great deal of the time, so there was a lot more connectedness. They knew each other's families. They were just, there was this fraternity and just this sense that they all...
So that's just what you want to see, that we are each other.
Exactly.
And now?
Now they go home every weekend. So they're in home when they're in session during the week. So they're in session 4 days, and then they go home on the weekend.
So break the cord.
Yes. So the social fabric isn't there anymore, and this practicality around being able to look out for each other and help each other out. Both of those stop 4 or 5 years ago, and everybody pointed to that on the timeline and said that's when things started really falling apart in Washington in terms of the workability. So for them to be able to have...
That's a wonderful insight.
Isn't that great?
Yes.
And so they were, and this was, you know, the lobbyists and the professionals within the belt, within the corridor, were saying, you are really onto something with this I love you business, because, yeah, we have a fundamental breakdown of doing business as usual here. And I get how something just as simple as saying I love you and establishing that fellow bond you really might be onto something there. And they were, I was asked by a number of people, both with eBay and other lobbyists, would you be interested in coming back to D.C.?
Oh, I was going to ask you if you could do that.
Yeah, they did. They asked me if I was willing to come back and talk to groups.
I was just going to ask you that myself. Is there a time, could you go back and speak to both houses? Could you speak to them as...
I would love that.
Yes, and, so would I.
And one
really
of,
so would they.
Yeah, they would. And I will pick that up with my representative, who I had one of the most delightful encounters with, Nancy Pelosi.
Oh, talk about that. Yes.
So Nancy Pelosi, oh my goodness, that woman just is I love you. It's disarming how effusive and loving that she is. She was extraordinary, and when she heard what I was up to, and especially when I said I love you to Mitch McConnell, she did. She died with laughter. And when I was leaving, she mouthed a great big I love you across the room. But I will definitely pick up with her and her office, and then the other just extraordinary.
You can do that here.
Yes.
Okay.
And the other extraordinary woman is Anna Ishu.
Oh,
who was the representative down in San Jose. And she is a titan. If all of this freedom that we were just talking about with the internet webs and that it just becomes the currency, this exchange of commerce and communication and ideas, so much of it is because of her efforts. And the reason why we have a free, unfettered internet is because of her and her efforts. And she's just such an extraordinary...
Can you talk about that? Explain why?
I met her at the gala for the Internet Association, and she was one of the honorees. And for 20 years, as long as we've been using this medium, she's been making sure that it remains a utility for us rather than a service, and that we don't have a degree of censorship, and we don't always have people trying to throttle it down and making it suit their needs and intents, but that it exists free for our use, unlike how it does in other countries. And she has just fought tirelessly for technology, for innovation, and for us to be able to enjoy the freedom of this utility. And what a delightful woman. And when I told her that I loved her, she cried. Because I got the sense that in her career in politics that she doesn't get that very much.
Okay, so can I interrupt something here?
Yes.
Because you, everything you say touches on something that everyone feels and wants to respond to, I'm guessing. But she did something many, many years ago that seemed to be... It wasn't world peace, and it wasn't, you know, European borders, and it wasn't... She did something that was enormously important, I thought. And I wrote her a love letter.
Mm, that's great.
Uh-huh.
Of course
this was
you
about,
did.
Of course I did, about long before I was doing this. I mean, it was so wonderful. And she wrote back and thanked me so profusely and said she was so appreciative because she was afraid that this thing was such a little thing.
Mm.
And I wrote back again, and I said, make no mistake about it. Life is made up of the little things that build up and make all of life livable. Anyway, the point is, yes. So that was my actual experience with her.
I think that they lose sight of that as well when they're on the inside of it. And since compromise is such a big part of it's the essence of politics, that they... I think they're more present to the fact that they're disappointing people all of the time.
That's why we need... Okay, so my little love letter, you know, advertising today is... That's why we need to write love letters to them when they've done something good instead of the I hate you letters when they've done something disappointing. Those they throw in the wastebasket.
It's got to be like 99 to 1, the I hate you letters to the I love you letters.
And their wastebaskets are very full because people don't read I hate you letters.
Right.
They throw them away and think that you're nuts.
Well,
for
except,
having written it.
Except,
but the I love you...
It really... It does
positive
have that,
does more than negative.
Absolutely. It has that extra impact. The other point that I wanted to make about having this front row seat to D.C. is that we met with a lot of people who were on the other side of the
mm-hmm.
issue that we were on. With
oh.
These had to do with trade and taxation. And we were prepped in advance is that these people might give you 5 or 10 minutes. They might give you an hour. You might walk in and they might say, thank you very much for coming. And that there's this point of pride in D.C. to never, ever, ever change your position on an issue.
Oh, I know. You see that all the time. And when people do, they call you names. And
right.
Yes,
so
like you're lacking.
Most of the people that we were walking in to see were on the other side of the issue from us. But there was such a generosity of time, of attention, of listening, and they all came away with a new perspective about consequences, intended, unintended, of what their legislation could bring. And they could not encourage us enough. It's like, we do listen. We hear you.
Oh, good.
Please write us. Please reach out to us. It's great that you contact and you see us here in D.C., but you know what? It's much more effective and easier to get access to us back in our home districts. So they said, come see us at home because your perspective is invaluable to us. And, you know, they could have been blowing smoke, but they weren't. You could see on the faces of their staffers that they know what their awesome responsibility is.
But actual letters. I went to a luncheon years and years ago for Barbara Boxer. Somebody had asked me. And she was speaking. And first thing you know, she has pulled out a letter, this tattered old piece of paper, from her pocket, from one of her constituents. She said, I carry this love letter with me everywhere. It is her encouragement. It was astounding.
Yes, yes.
Personal in touch.
And you are...
Leading up to actual, I love you. Yes.
Well, you are a standard bearer and a champion of the written letter. And I am... It's one of the things that I admire most about you.
Thank you.
Is because it is something that's lost, that our degree of ephemera right now is much shorter, a text or an email.
But that letter that you're holding has actually felt the touch of someone's hand.
Right, and the time and effort and energy and heart that goes into creating it and reaching out, going, this is a special communication.
Yes, and it still is, isn't
yes.
it? Yes.
And so it was just such an extraordinary experience for me and also very heartening as well, given the division and the rancor and the enmity mm-hmm. that we're seeing in this election cycle, unlike any that I can really remember.
And we're only seeing a few people in this election. Oh, it's disgustingly ugly. It's terrible. Mm-hmm. But we're only seeing a few people. You're seeing more people who are not on the television.
Yes. Well, they are, but in seeing them in their unguarded, in their lesser guarded moments.
That's right.
In person, you get to see a very different face than that talking
maybe
that, head
maybe
on television.
Maybe that's the point, yeah.
That they're real human beings.
Yes.
And I think that was my biggest takeaway, is that it's so easy to label them as a group.
Oh, they're
the
a definite other.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And there is no other. There's just what's over here. And again, we've talked every time about the Ho'oponopono prayer. And the single most powerful tool that I have in my life for being able to silence that voice that we were just talking about before. That, oh, they're so X, Y, and Z, and I'm mm-hmm. so A, B, and C. Mm-hmm. Anything to make them different. Or when we feel that separation, that sense of righteousness. And where I struggle most with this, too, is when we're faced with these tremendous tragedies that we face.
Oh.
We sat down here before, yes. After Paris. And then we sat down here before after Brussels. And now we have San Bernardino and Orlando and
yeah.
Baghdad and Bangladesh and Afghanistan. Every single day there is somebody killing somebody else in the name of other. And so in the face of that, how do I then not label all of those people, those attackers, those terrorists, those brutal, subhuman, fill-in-the-blank, they're me. They are not the other. They are me. And so what I do is with the Ho'oponopono prayer is that I saw a tweak or a revisitation of it. So instead of it being, I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, as I'd known it to be, is that what was missing for me and what the real first line is that I am responsible. I am responsible for this. So in the minute, you take responsibility for all of it. So I am the bomber. I am the attacker. I am the oppressor. I am the victim. I am all of it.
I think that is a little too sophisticated for at least the Western world and for most of it.
Well,
I don't know how you...
Yeah. Here's the point. The reason why I do all of this is because my daughter's 4. And if we don't get it right now, at this key inflection moment in our civilization, then her generation is the last of humanity. And the planet doesn't care, because so many other dominant species have come and gone over the last billions of years of creation-dom, that the planet doesn't care. We've been here for not even a footnote. And we'll be gone in a breath of air.
Yes.
So if we don't solve this piece, if we cannot look at that person right across from us, no matter what, and look them in the eyes and say, I love you, then her generation is the last generation in humankind. We need a degree of workability.
Oh, I was just going to bring that word back to you. But doing this, if this I love you becomes universal.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I've told many people about this, and they all think it's wonderful, by the way. I haven't gotten anybody who has said, that's nuts, just like you don't. But
well, what's nuts is that here's 3 words in our language that we speak every day. I, you, love. And you say that in a certain order, and people lose their minds about, oh, I can't say that. It's like, really? But you can say, and early on when I was starting this work, I had a friend and champion who did a lot of work around the world in mediation and reconciliation. So getting together people who were irreconcilable and getting them to reconcile and find their common ground. And she said to me, oh, we're much more comfortable with the currency of I hate you than I love you. Now, I love you is really confronting.
Now, why? I mean, my question is, I love you calls for some adjusted behavior. In other words, if we're all saying this and going crazy freed up around it, it can't stop just at that. It doesn't have to be followed up by one of the attendees at that Works of Heart that we did, where you were the speaker, Works of Heart, Conversations About Love Expressed. And she wrote to me the next day, and she said, after listening to you, and you tell me if this is a good enough start, and she said, I couldn't bring myself to say I love you to people, but I was a lot nicer to everyone. I told her that was a fine start.
Oh,
I mean,
that's wonderful. Well, and along those lines, as we were saying before we started the broadcast, is that I found out from Terry Tillman, who is a member of the Transformational Leadership Council, that he's traveled to 94 countries in the world, and he saw this greeting in the tribesmen of South Africa that he'd never seen anywhere else in the world. And this was with the Samburu and Nave tribes. And what they do is they look at each other right in the eye for 5 to 15 seconds, and one of them says, I see you, just like Avatar. And the other says, I am here. So at the end of the day, all we really need is to be seen and acknowledged that we are here, and that we're not just living in this monologue in our head, in this individual experience. Having that one simple moment of connection with whomever happens to be standing across from you, you get that they just are you. And you are them. And as I've spoken before in the play shops, when people are crazy freed up around sharing I love you without any thought to it, the weirdest thing happens where naturally the curtain of celebration separation just falls away. And we just start, we are saying I love you, and we're hearing it in our heads as I love me. And that just comes from, you don't have to mean it. And even with the Ho'oponopono prayer, you don't have to mean it. When you say, I am responsible, I am sorry, please forgive me, I love you, thank you, It's especially useful to say it when you don't mean it and that you can't generate it. You just say it, because just the act of saying it means that it's stopping that monologue in your head for long enough to consider that there's other people who exist outside of your head.
That's a wonderful point to make. Yeah.
So it can be
and
that simple.
Sometimes when you say things that you don't mean, mm-hmm. I would be guessing that the sound of them gets to be normal and you can mean it.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, it's like I tell people in love letters workshops, they don't want to write certain things. It's just I can't even say certain things. I say, write it down. Just write it down. It's only private for you. And you might see that once you've written down this unutterable truth, it's not so bad at
exactly.
all.
And in my years...
So that sounds like what you're...
Well, as I say, in my years of doing this work, and not once... has anyone turned into a pillar of salt or
yes.
burst into flames by saying, I love you? As far as I know, nobody has died in the act of saying, I love you, after coming out of one of the play shops and being crazy freed up around saying, I love you. So the freedom that I give everybody at the beginning of all of the play shops is that consider that I love you means nothing and everything. And from that place, share I love you like candy for a week and see what shows up in your life.
But you just touched on it interesting. You said the freedom I give you, but you are also a permission giver.
Well, we all need, we all do better when we're granted permission to do something, right?
That's huge.
Yes. So, again, our monologue is not going to consider that. We can't say, I possibly can't say I love you to everybody. That's absurd. That's preposterous. And so if I come along and say, look, you can... You can do it for a week, see what happens, and you know, you'll see what happens.
Of course, you're blessed with some other little quality here that I always knew from right away, but now I've got it in words. You don't take yourself seriously. In a certain way that would preclude you. You don't have that narcissism.
I think that is purely a function of me being in this pursuit for the last 7 years. Because before I started, I would have been the last person on the planet that I would have picked to have been the Johnny Appleseed of I Love You. And believe me, even though I generate I Love You all the time and I've said it to thousands of people, it's not uninflected for me when I say it. It's not the most natural thing in the world.
Okay.
I'm just not like popping, hey, I love you.
Yeah.
I have to give myself that freedom and that permission to be able to do it. And I know, though, that since I've done it so many thousands of times now and that I haven't turned into a pillar of salt or burst into flames, that I think the next I love you will probably be safe.
Oh, yes, a reality check.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for, excuse me, doing this again. I could just listen to you for days and days, and I'm so eager to see what happens when you go back to Washington, D.C.
Oh, thank you, and I'm just so...
It's such a natural for them.
Again, although that was surprising to me, I see how naturally that they embraced it.
And they're hankering for it.
And they're
hankering
for it.
Because living in the kind of acrimony that they're living in has got to be damaging.
It is. They don't like it as human beings.
No, that's right, because they're better than that in fact.
Yes, and they know that. So.
Oh, gosh. Okay, I'm going to go home and cry my eyes out.
Well,
thank you,
honey. So grateful for you, and I love you, thank you so much for holding this space, for all just sharing all of this great news in the world, and thank you.
Well, thank you, and I do actually love you a lot, as you know now. Anyway, okay, so I love you out there too, and let's just join Joshua in changing not just the greeting, but the feeling and taking a moment. And by the way, if I may, write to your senators, write to your representatives, not when you're angry at something. I mean, you can feel free. I don't care. You can do that too. But when they've done something nice or you're feeling something positive for them, reward that, and I think we'll get farther.
Just tell them you love them.
Yes, that too.
In a letter.
Yes. Oh, definitely in a letter.
Yes.
And you can even say, if you're uncomfortable about it to start, you can even say, Josh Abramson told me to tell you I love you.
Exactly.
Can we do that? Can
Please.
We just ride in on you?
Lay it on my shoulders. I'm happy
let's
to take
that.
It. If you
oh,
need that
let's
opening.
Let's do that, everybody.
Yes.
Josh Abramson told me to tell you I love you. Sign
yes.
your name. Stick it in the mailbox. I'm going to do that. Okay. Thank you, honey.
Thank
well,
you.
Until next time, this is Janet Gallen saying goodbye. Mwah.